Hey guys, it's Charles with the Barbershop Group Podcast. I'm glad to be back with you all this weekend. Hopefully everybody's had a great holiday. Didn't eat too much, but enjoyed your food, your family, some time off work, or whatever it is that you happen to enjoy. And of course, always being considerate if you are an individual who has experienced a loss, if it's been difficult for you, my thoughts and my prayers definitely go out to you and your family. Hopefully you are taking a moment to recall the beautiful moments that you had with the individual that may have left your life, left the physical body and the physical world. And hopefully you're taking some time to go through whatever the grieving process is for you. If you all have not had a chance to check it out, if you go to our Instagram page in the bio link there, we've got a video from Dr. Damon A. Silas, psychotherapist out of North Carolina. And he talks at length about what the grieving process is, what it isn't, how it may look and how it may not look, and even shares a little bit about how he got to doing some of the grief counseling that he does today. So, you know, we just try to be considerate and have everybody in our thoughts and well wishes. You know, guys, this particular episode will be part of is the first part, and it'll be part of a longer set of episodes that focus on one particular thing that I have had some experience with. If you already saw the title, you know that, of course, this is about male sexual abuse and molestation and assault. You know, I feel like there isn't enough said about male assault and sexual abuse. And a lot of times when men try to talk about it, those voices, our voices, tend to get interrupted by people who want to remind us about the offenders, about, you know, male on female sexual violence and things like that, which absolutely is deplorable and it needs to stop. And we definitely don't need to squander the voices that are speaking about those things, because a human being is a human being and boundaries are boundaries. And it doesn't matter if it's a woman or a man, sexual violence, period, needs to stop. But I think that a lot of times when guys try to speak about what sexual violence looks like against them or what their experiences have been, not only are we men fighting against some social issues that may be presented by the opposite gender, but we're also presented some social barriers by other men, right? And so today I'm going to begin talking a little bit about the myths and facts surrounding male sexual abuse. Obviously, there are a lot of cultural myths surrounding sexual abuse and assault of boys and men, and it can be, you know, a serious obstacle, or they can be serious obstacles to understanding and healing. So it's important for us to talk about some of those myths and get past them, right? Right off the bat, I want to tell you guys that there are some key facts to think about. Number one, boys can't be sexually abused. That's a myth. Number two, if a boy was abused, it was his fault. That's also a myth. The third myth is that sexual abuse is less harmful to males than it is to females. That's a lie. And the fourth myth is that only gay men are sexually abused. All right. The fifth myth is that being a male survivor means that you're gay. The sixth myth is that males who were abused by females got lucky. I know some of you heard that before. And number seven is that, well, male survivors are going to abuse others. All of these are false. And so I want to talk to you guys about some of these key facts, and I will try when and where I can to speak to you all from a personal experience, right? From a personal perspective about this thing, because I've had some interesting things happen to me, and I've had some interesting things said to me by those people who learned, by some people who have learned that I was sexually molested. Okay. So again, key facts here. Boys and men can be sexually used or abused, and it has nothing to do with how masculine we are, okay? If a boy liked the attention that he was getting, or even if he got sexually aroused during the abuse, or even sometimes wanted the attention or sexual contact, even that does not mean that he wanted it or liked being manipulated or abused, okay? Or that any part of what happened in any way was his responsibility or his fault. You see, sexual abuse and assault, it harms boys and men and girls and women in ways that are similar and in ways that are different. But just because those ways are similar and different doesn't mean that they aren't equal. They're equally harmful. And I think I need to say that because a lot of times when we start talking about a male survivor of abuse, people aren't as sympathetic. People aren't as empathetic to the man who has been abused sexually, right? We don't tend to give him the same room to speak about his issue. And one time on a previous podcast, I had to say to you guys, you know, a lot of people out there heard about the Me Too movement and just really, really started thinking that the Me Too movement was all about women. And Tarana Burke said, hey, look, it's not just about women. It's about anybody who has had their sexual boundaries trampled on, male or female. Okay. Now, the majority of women who were abused sexually, they started to speak up, but a lot of men didn't. But it doesn't mean that it's not harmful to men. Okay. You know, one of the other key facts to think about and understand is that boys can be sexually abused by both straight and gay men and women. Sexual abuse is the result of abusive behavior that takes advantage of a child's vulnerability, period. It's in no way related to that child's sexual orientation or the sexual orientation of the abusive person, you see. So we have to be very clear about that. Whether a child is gay, straight, or bisexual, right? Whether the offender is gay, straight, or bisexual, a boy's sexual orientation is neither the cause nor the result of sexual abuse. And I have to really, really say that loudly because, you know, not so long ago, someone approached me, contacted me and said, hey, would you like to speak about your experience with sexual molestation? And so I said, yeah, I'd be open to it. I got to looking at some of the other individuals who would be there doing some research, and I found that there was one particular professor of psychology or somebody who had gotten their doctorate in psychology. Their research was in trying to find the correlation between Black masculinity, sexual molestation, and homosexuality, you see. And there are a lot of people, I know this to be true in the African-American community anyway, right? There are a lot of people in the African-American community who think that there is an absolute correlation that if a boy was abused, right, by a man, that he's going to be gay. And, well, that's not the case either, okay? Girls and women can sexually abuse or assault boys and men. And now what's starting to happen in 2019 is that we're starting to have more and more men come out talking about their sexual abuse. And they are speaking about being abused, not just by men, but by women. And not just by adult women, but by older sisters, you know, people who are in authoritative positions who were female, right? A lot of guys are starting to talk about that, you see. And we're still struggling as a nation, as a group of people, to get past this idea that if a man was sexually molested or if he had sexual contact with a woman that was older, that he was really lucky, that he really should be happy that he was exposed like that. He got the goods. No, that's assault. That's still molestation. And so we have to rework what we have come to understand about that. You know, just because some woman is older than this 13-year-old boy doesn't mean that it's not molestation. Oh, he wanted it. He did not want his boundaries trampled. I don't think any young man is gonna say that once he understands what sexual abuse and sexual molestation is, and once he understands what exploitation is. Okay? Most boys and men who are sexually abused or assaulted will not go on to become abusers. And I know that that's a big one, and that's difficult. That's extremely difficult for people to accept, because there are many of us. Maybe you're one of them. Maybe you know somebody. If you share this podcast with somebody, right, that person listening may say, oh man, wait a minute. What do you mean they don't go on to abuse people? Yeah, that's how it happens. This person gets exposed to something and then they expose somebody to something, right? Well, it's not that cut and dry. And I can tell you it's not that cut and dry from a couple different angles. The first one is a professional angle, right? Look, working with juvenile sex offenders and working with the victims of rape and sexual molestation showed me something. Okay. The majority of juvenile sex offenders would not go on to repeat their behavior unless they did not work on developing proper boundaries with people. But when you started to kind of go back into the history of their lives, you would often find out that this boy was never taught proper boundaries by the person who offended him. Okay, by the person who took advantage of him, you see. And so that person was confused from the outset, didn't have any guidance there. There are some pieces in there that have to be present and missing for a boy to just say, hey, you know what? This was what happened to me. I'm going to go do that to someone else. And that's why a lot of times my hair on the back of my neck stands up when I hear about somebody like an R. Kelly, who we know now is in the news for possibly allegedly abusing some women and doing some really foul and atrocious things to these women. You know, when you hear the story come out that, well, oh, he was abused too, it almost sounds like we're making an excuse. But while we're making an excuse for his behavior, we're also kind of making a correlation between his experience being abused and his behavior. And so now if we do that, if we accept that it's factual, that means that all of these other individuals out here who've been molested, yeah, they're offenders. And we got to start treating them like they're part of a Minority Report. If some of you guys are old enough to remember that movie, you know that you would try to predict who was going to commit a crime and you take them out before they do it, right? So when you think about right now, the stats being 1 in 6 boys before the age of 18, being molested, and 1 in 4 girls being molested, that means that you got a lot of people out there, right? Based on this thing about, well, if you're abused, then you're going to abuse somebody. You got a lot of boys and girls out there who are going to grow up to be abusers, factually, according to this. And that's false. Okay. So I want to talk about myth number one. If you remember, myth number one is that boys can't be sexually used or abused, and if one is, he can never be a real man, right? Because that's something that a lot of us probably thought. Let's face it, a lot of us, man, we grew up in neighborhoods, we grew up in towns, we grew up in religious environments and in families that believe things like this. And it's hard for us to come to terms with it, but I think that we've got to do it if we really, really want to be serious about addressing men and boys who've been abused. So by the time this podcast and the other podcasts are done, this series is done, you're going to have a lot of information coming to you about men and abuse. And hopefully it will help you inform somebody else. Okay. So again, if a boy is abused, doesn't mean that he can never be a quote unquote real man. First of all, for those of you out there listening to this podcast, there's no such thing as a real man. There's no such thing as a fake man. There's no such thing as a real woman and fake woman. Those are terms that you use to project your ideas onto other people. It's a judgment, and it's a judgment more about yourself than it is about somebody else. Let's just be straight about that. Now, anyway, back to it. Everybody absorbs the myth that males aren't victims to some extent. We all have done it, okay? It's central to masculine gender socialization. and boys pick up on it very early. We do. This myth implies that a boy or man who's been sexually abused will never be a real man, right? He's some kind of sissy, a punk. Our society expects males to always be able to protect ourselves. It's what we do. Not only are we charged socially with protecting ourselves, we're also charged with protecting women, which there's a problem in that a lot of people don't want to address, but I'll leave that for another podcast. Successful men are depicted as never being vulnerable, never being weak, never being quite authentic, either physically or emotionally. Okay. And later on in another segment, I'll talk about how it can be different for us guys and how being male can be hard to heal. That'll be later on down the road. Whether you agree with the definition of masculinity or not, boys are not men. And I know that socially speaking, especially for certain minority groups in America, there's a time when, you know, a boy is looked at as a man. And it doesn't mean that it's right. It just means that there's some really messed up stuff that society is doing. And it's not just in America. There are other places, too, that do that. And well, when you talk to the boys, they'll let you know that it doesn't feel right. Okay. They're children. They're weaker. They're more vulnerable than those who sexually abuse and exploit them. Okay. They use greater size, their strength. They use their knowledge to manipulate these boys and coerce these boys into unwanted sexual experiences. And they also use those things to keep the boys silent. This is usually done from a position of authority. Doesn't matter. It could be a coach, be a teacher, a religious leader, right? A sibling, older cousin, admired athlete, a social leader. You know, when I think about a coach, I think about the guy Sandusky at Penn State, who's doing time now, right, for having his way with these boys. And there have been many coaches, all right, who have used their status as coach to do things to young men and young women, young boys and young girls, all right? These people will use whatever means is available to them to reduce the amount of resistance, such as they'll pay a little bit more attention to the boy. They'll give that boy special privileges, money, other gifts. You know, we call it grooming. There's a podcast where I talk about grooming in detail. Promises, they'll do bribes, and sometimes even just use threats. You see, what happens to any of us as children does not need to be defined, or doesn't need to define us as adults. And I think a lot of us would agree with that, right? You had a bad experience as a child. That shouldn't color who you are today, right? You don't have to allow that to happen. It's important to remember that 1 in 6 boys are sexually abused before the age of 18, right? Okay, 1 in 6 boys. And remember that 1 in 6 may actually be an inaccurate number, because there are yet so many boys and men who are afraid to speak up about what happened to them, you see. So later on, I will talk to you guys about some male survivors of sexual abuse, and you'll find these stories very interesting. These are people who went on to live very, very healthy lives. The second myth is that if a boy experienced sexual arousal during abuse, he wanted it or he enjoyed it, right? You see? No, it's not true. Many boys and men believe this myth, though, and they feel a lot of guilt and shame because they got physically aroused during the abuse. And by the way, this also happens to some women. Some women have experienced, you know, feelings of shame and guilt because they've been aroused in the commission of being raped, you know, and that's no. You see, you can go see somebody about this. You can talk to a sex therapist about this and trauma therapist about this, and they'll tell you these things. You see, it's important to understand that males can respond to sexual stimulation with an erection or even an orgasm, even in sexual situations that are extremely traumatic and painful. All right. And I can recall being molested and feeling aroused on one occasion. I can recall actually, and not even knowing what an orgasm was at the time, but having, you know, like pre-semen, pre-cum leave my genitals, right? And not knowing what was happening. And it messed me up. I was like, oh my God, like, I don't even know what this is. Did I pee on myself? You understand what I'm saying? You know, that's just how the male bodies and brains work. Okay. Those who sexually use and abuse boys, they know these things. They often attempt to maintain secrecy and to keep the abuse going on for as long as they can. And they'll tell a child, you know, that the sexual experience or the sexual response shows that they were a willing participant. They'll actually convince a kid that, oh, look, this is what happened to you. See, that means you liked it. And I know that sounds very sick for those people listening to this. It is. You know, it is. It's very problematic, you know, but it doesn't make it true. Boys are not seeking to be sexually abused or exploited. Okay. They can, however, be manipulated into experiences that they don't like or even understand at the time, you see. And later on, I'll talk a little bit about guilt and shame as it relates to male sexual abuse. There are many situations where a boy, after being gradually manipulated with attention or affection or gifts, right, feels like he wants the attention and sexual experiences. In an otherwise lonely life, you know, the attention and pleasure of sexual contact from someone the boy admires could really start to feel good, but it doesn't make it right. In reality, it's still a boy who was vulnerable to manipulation. It's still a boy who was betrayed by somebody. Okay, he was betrayed by somebody who selfishly exploited him. All right, they wanted that boy's attention. They wanted that boy's affection. They looked at that boy and they say, oh, look, he wants my attention. He wants my affection. So let me do this with him and to him. Okay, that's not okay. Myth number three was that sexual abuse is less harmful to males than it is to women and girls, and that's not true. Most of the studies out there will show that long-term effects of sexual abuse and assault can be quite damaging for both males and females alike. All right. A study by the U.S. Centers for Disease and Control and Prevention found that sexual abuse of boys was more likely to involve penetration of some kind, which is associated with greater psychological harm. Now, listen to that very carefully. Okay. The Centers for Disease Control guys have found out that in the cases where boys have been sexually assaulted, they're actually being penetrated more often than girls. And then you hear me say earlier that a lot of boys aren't even reporting yet. So I want you to think about what's happening to boys for a minute. You see, that's wild, man. Okay, that's wild. The harm caused by sexual abuse or assault mostly depends on things not determined by gender. It includes the abuser's identity, the duration of the abuse, whether the child told anyone at the time, and if so, whether the child was believed and helped. Many boys have suffered harm because adults who could believe them, they're reluctant to help, or they refuse to help, or they refuse to acknowledge what happened, or they refuse to acknowledge the harm that it caused. Just complete outright denial. This increases the harm, actually, especially the shame felt by boys and men. And it leads many to believe that they have to tough it out, man up, get over it on their own. And we have heard a lot of people say stuff like that. And that, of course, makes it harder to seek the help that we need. All right. And in another episode, I'll talk a little bit about how unwanted or abusive sexual experiences can cause problems and how being male can make it hard to heal. The fourth myth is that only gay men sexually abuse. Not true. Okay? Studies about this question suggest that men who have sexually abused a boy most often identify as heterosexual, as straight, and are often involved in adult heterosexual relationships at the time that they abuse a boy. There's no indication that a gay man is more likely to engage in sexual abuse than a straight man. And some studies even suggest that it's less likely. But sexual abuse is not a sexual relationship. And we have to really, really think about that now. There's a difference between a relationship where you have two consenting people involved and exploitation or assault. It's totally different. The sexual orientation of the abusive person is not really relevant to the abusive interaction. Okay? A man who sexually abuses or exploits boys is not engaging in a homosexual relationship any more than men who are sexually who sexually abuse or exploit girls are engaging in a heterosexual relationship. You don't say about a rapist that he's raping somebody he's in a relationship with, or rather, you don't say, oh, look, they're in a raping relationship. No, it's not a consenting relationship. It's rape. Same thing when it applies to boys and men. Okay? It's the same thing when it applies to boys and men. The fifth myth was that being a male survivor means that, yeah, you're probably gay. And I can tell you, at a certain point, I remember telling an individual who was gay that I was molested as a child. And that person started to develop feelings for me in a sense, right? I think partly because I was being open with him. And I got to tell you guys, a lot of people, it doesn't matter, man or woman, a lot of folks don't really know how to receive somebody being open about these parts of their lives, right? And so this guy, for whatever reason, you know, he just kind of started liking me, you know? And then he started doing some extra things, right, that were a little bit manipulative, okay? A little bit shiesty, and I won't mention them all. And I don't know if I should say the word shiesty like that. Some people get offended, but, you know, it is what it is right now, man. We focusing on male abuse, so just think about that. This guy was doing some things that were probably considered to be grooming behavior, okay? And so you could look at that and say, well, was it because he was gay, or was it because he was just, you know, having some offending behavior? And as you begin to kind of drill things down, right, you splice it apart, you begin to see that it was grooming behavior, and that it was behavior that a straight man or a gay man could do. Okay. A lot of people think that, oh man, you were abused as a kid. Oh man, your manhood must be jacked up. You must not really be a true man, a real man, and stuff like that, right? But that stuff is defined by larger society. In some cases, it's, you know, your religion. A lot of you guys out there, look, man, if the shoe fits, you got to wear it. A lot of you guys have subscribed to religions that define what a man is, right? And it works well for you while you're living up to that said religion's demands. But the moment that you can't pay the bills the right way, or lay pipe the right way, or stand up to somebody, or be tough about this, about, or about that, then now what? Or your relationship with God is no less because you couldn't do something. You see what I'm saying? That's not what makes you a real man. I know it sounds crazy, but just think about that for a minute, right? But that stuff is defined by larger society and culture and religion and all that stuff, man. Look, even men who clearly identify as heterosexual and men who reject very traditional heterosexual traits may fear that others will find out, you know, or when they find out about their sexual abuse, they'll say, uh-oh, this person is gay. He's not a real man. Men who identify as gay or bisexual may wonder if their sexual orientation was influenced in some way by the abusive experience, or may even be the cause of their orientation. So being abused, man, can really, really, like, it can take off the clear glasses, or it can take away your clear eyesight, you know, and so now you're wearing these foggy glasses, your judgment about things are off. And I tell people all the time, be careful. If, you know, okay, if you've been the victim of something traumatic, you got to understand that until you do the work and get the help to do the work and get through some of those traumatic experiences, everything that you see is going to be through the lens of trauma. And that's something that we all have to do, is we're going to see things through the lens of trauma, but we shouldn't always only live in a place and a space where Those are the only glasses that we wear. We need to get some help so that we can take those. So we need to get some help, you know, in order to be able to see clearly, to be able to move past the trauma, to be able to put things in their right place and in their right space, and try to, you know, continue to develop. You know, unfortunately, some of you guys out there, the therapists in the building, they know, but those who have not done a lot of trauma work or talked to anybody about it, you know, a lot of times, unfortunately, when you experience trauma, part of your development, part of your brain tends, your developmental stages, it gets stuck in a place. And so it's really, really crucial that, you know, we find individuals that we can work with to move past those things. But, yeah, I want to keep going here. And I know that some of this is heavy. It'll have you thinking a lot. There'll be a lot of questions about it. And at the end of the show, I'll make sure that you all have the email address in order to leave your comments and questions for me. But one of the other myths was that if a female used or abused a boy, then he was lucky, right? And if he doesn't feel lucky, then there must be something wrong with him. You know, some of you guys out there know that there have been several actors, there have been several musicians of different musical genres that talked about their experiences with older women. And a lot of times what tends to happen is, you know, when they're talking about their sexual experience with these older women, it's always macho, right? They try to spin it some kind of way. And if they don't spin it into macho, a lot of people who are listening to the radio show or watching the show or whatever, a lot of guys show up and say, hey, man, you know what, dude, you hit that? Yeah, man, you got a MILF. Well, you know what? No, it was abuse. Okay. It was abusive. It was an older person in a position of authority who was taking advantage of a young person. Again, guys, you have to remember that sexual consent requires, it's the consent of two people, right? And not only is it consent of two people, but, you know, there are laws regarding the ages and things like that, and we're aware of them. And as much as we want to try to create another narrative to step around accountability, we can't, okay? Because there are a lot of guys out there today who want to use the word narrative to try to avoid addressing some problematic or toxic behavior. Where we can't, okay, it is what it is, all right? So let's put on our big boy pants and let's deal with that, right? Or if we need some help, let's get with some men and some brothers in our communities and stuff that can help us deal with those things. If you can't stand on your own two feet, lean on your brother's shoulders, but find somebody who you can lean on so you're not using those types of things to avoid addressing issues of accountability. But anyway, you know, man, when a woman or a man does that, but when a woman does that, right, to a guy, it's still abuse. All right. you know, this is a huge myth. And like several of the others, it comes from the image of masculinity that boys learn from very, very early on. It says not only that males can't be sexually abused, but that any sexual experience that a guy has with girls and women, especially older ones, oh, yeah, now he's a dude. He's a real man, right? He's a stud. Again, the confusion comes from focusing on the sexual aspect, on focusing on the sexual aspect instead of the abusive aspect of it. See, a lot of people don't like to talk about that part of it. The abusive aspect is the exploitation, the betrayal, the grooming, the power that that person had, the trust, the admiration, right? So you've got to ask yourself some questions about those things and not just go with, look, he got laid. Don't be so quick about that. Right. Now, if you want to go back, so if you think about some of those teachers who abused young men when they were elementary or junior high school students, some of those teachers were impregnated by these boys. Right. And now think about what that has done to, now he's a man and he's had a child with a woman who actually abused him, a woman who used her position, her powerful position to abuse him. She's messed up his life, man. You see what I'm saying? He's got a kid with this one, with his abuser. That's no different than a woman being raped by her uncle and being pregnant, getting pregnant by an uncle. Imagine what her life is like. It's the same for a boy. Okay. You can try to change the narrative all you want to, but it's real. It is what it is. Reality, premature, coerced, or otherwise abusive or exploitative sexual experiences, they're never positive. Whether they are imposed by an older sister, a sister of a friend, a babysitter, an aunt, a mother, or any other female in a position of power over a boy, it's never positive. At minimum, they cause confusion and insecurity. They almost always harm boys and men's capacities for trust and intimacy. And I can tell you guys, being the victim of sexual abuse as a child, man, you want to talk about trust and intimacy? My stuff was jacked up, okay? And even to this day, I'm 43. I still have issues in terms of intimacy and trust. I just, you know, I have to work through some of these things. I know where it's coming from today, and I have people I can talk to about it and different things that I can do, but it's real, man. It never goes away, you see? And maybe at some point I can delve off into that a little bit more, but this topic is so heavy, I don't want to get just stuck on my experience alone. But yeah, it definitely throws a wrench into your life where you don't know exactly how to trust others or how to trust yourself with your body and the feelings, right? You don't know what's proper intimacy and what's improper intimacy, or even when it's there, you see. A gay man who experienced sexual arousal when abused by a female, like I said earlier, he might wonder, well, wait, does this mean that I'm straight? Or he may wonder, you know, why he was chosen by this woman. In some cases, I've even heard gay boys and men who were abused say, well, they thought that they were going to be able to change me. She thought that if she forced me to have sex with her, then I would like it, right, and want more of it, and then that would make me straight and not gay. Yeah, I've heard all types of stories about this stuff, and I'm talking about, I haven't heard these things, you know, just in passing. Working with juvenile sex offenders, working with adult victims of sexual abuse, working with survivors and all, working with rapists, man, you hear these things, and it's just like, whoa. Okay. And when you see behaviors of people who haven't gotten the help, you can point it out. You see it. Okay. Being sexually abused, whether by males or females, can cause a variety of other emotional and psychological problems. However, boys and men often, we don't recognize the connections between what happened and later problems. You know, and I got to stop here. To tell you guys, I kind of chuckled now, but at the time it was not funny. It wasn't funny. It's not funny today, but thankfully I'm not in that place anymore. But, you know, I can tell you, I remember being in a strip club, and I did do strip clubs often, man. It just wasn't appealing to me, right? Because strip clubs weren't appealing to me because I was thinking, well, you can't have sex with strippers, right? And if I'm looking at somebody, I'm going to want to have sex with them. That's the way this works in my mind, at least at the time. That's the way it worked. And I remember, man, getting paid and using all of my money. The rent was due, took all of the money out of the bank and gave it to a stripper because she said she was going to call me later. That, you know, she thought that I was intelligent. And she ran this game on me, but you couldn't tell me anything at the time. I thought that this was a person who was genuinely interested in me as a human being, you see? And for me personally, looking back, I know that came from the issue that I had with boundaries and trust and intimacy. I thought everybody that I met, that it was going to be that way. And it's not, you know. To be used as a sexual object by a more powerful person, male or female, is never a good thing, and it can truly cause lasting harm. And I even go as far as to say, for guys, you know, who are listening to this show, or for the women listening to this show, you know, a lot of times we see a guy exhibiting some behavior, man, and we just, all we see is a dog. All we see is a player. or something like that. And if you look behind the curtain, you may see something else. You may see something else a lot more sinister than a person who just likes to be with several different people. And I'm not saying that that's always the case, but wow, you know, this stuff comes out in some really, really astounding ways. Okay. The myth number 7 is that boys who are sexually abused will go on to abuse others. And I mentioned that earlier, and that's not true. Okay. You know, and it's a lot of people have this thought based on the saying hurt people, right? Well, hurt people when they haven't gotten the help that they needed. Okay. When they haven't gotten the help that they needed, you bet, you can bet your bottom dollar that a lot, you know, they may not have learned from their mistake. Okay. But when it comes to victimization, I want you guys to understand something clearly. And this is where we've got to get out of that male female dichotomy, right? That polarizing thinking. Okay. When a woman is raped by someone, we don't say that that woman is going to go on to rape other people. Okay. We don't say, look, that she was raped, so she's going to become a rapist. But when we see a boy or a man, look, he was molested, he was raped, he's going to become a molester, a rapist. That's what we say about the boy, but we don't say that about women. See how culturally we got some things messed up that we just can't deal with? We just can't deal with it. There's nothing factually out there. It's nothing out there to prove it to be factual, for it to be correct. If we just got that and we ran with it, that this is what a guy is going to do if he's been abused. It's a myth, and it's dangerous because it can create a tremendous amount of fear in boys and men. I mean, not only fear becoming abusers themselves, and that's now when you're talking about somebody but fearing becoming an abuser, you're talking about somebody who takes on a whole lot of self-hate. Now, they already have self-hate because of what was done to them by somebody else. But now, because society at large is saying, oh, you're going to be this sexual criminal because this is what happened to you. Now, see how we've added on to their self-hate? Okay. And I know a little bit about that self-hate too, because there was a certain time where I just couldn't even look at myself in the mirror. It was a time where I thought that I wasn't worthy of love. It's this self-hate thing shows up a lot of different ways, guys. Okay. They may also, you know, wonder like where they can be safe. Obviously, you know, may not only fear becoming abused, but that others will find out that they were abused and believe they're a danger to other children. And I've had people ask me, you know, you were abused as a kid. What are you doing to make sure you don't do that to your kids? And I'm like, whoa, what did you just ask me? Like, what? And then how do you even respond to something like that? It's difficult to respond to something like that because that person has already made a judgment about you and about what's happened to you. You see, just completely dumbfounded. And I will not get into some of the other feelings or use some of the words that I could use, right, to describe just what I was thinking at the time. But yeah, these are the types of things that people say, you know. Sadly, boys and men who tell of being abused, they're often viewed more as potential perpetrators than they are as people who need support, you see. And I think that that's what we tend to do a lot of times when it comes to men in our society who are in need of help. You know, I get it. A lot of women out there are feeling like they have been taken advantage of by men. And let's face it, they have, right? But a lot of boys have been taken advantage of by men too. You see, it's about power dynamics. It doesn't matter what your gender is. It doesn't matter what your race is. It doesn't matter, you know, what kind of money you've got in your pocket. There's a person who's more powerful than you. And the question becomes, how do they use that power against you or with you? You see, while it's true that many, though by no means not all, while it's true that many who sexually abuse children have histories of sexual abuse, it's not true that most boys who are sexually abused go on to abuse others. The majority of boys do not become sexually abusive as they grow older, okay? Even those who do perpetrate sex crimes as teens, if they get help when they're young, they typically don't offend. See, it's as a person gets older. See, the person who reoffends is a person who is, number one, older, and number two, does not get help. As a, when you can find out this stuff if you worked in the criminal justice environment, if you look up criminology and stats on rape and sexual molestation, if these guys continue to offend and they are not caught, they're not given options for rehabilitation over time, they will do that again. Okay. But when they're young and they are exposed to treatment programs, they're getting help, they're being taught how to respect other people's boundaries and how to cultivate their own boundaries. Yeah. No, those people who were abused will not abuse other people. Okay. That is the last thing on our minds. All right. And some final points. These are myths that everyone absorbs growing up. Okay. As long as society believes these myths, it's going to be hard for men to come forward. As long as society, men and women in this society, believe these myths, yeah, a lot of men ain't going to talk. Okay. As long as boys and men are, so as long as boys and men are harmed by unwanted abusive sexual experiences, they believe these myths, they're going to feel a lot of shame. They're going to feel a lot of self-hate. They're not going to talk. Okay. And so it's important for us to understand these things so that we can help guys get through them. Okay. You know, hopefully some of these things that you have heard will resonate with you guys. If you are somebody who has experienced sexual abuse or molestation and you've not reached out for help, please do so. Okay. You can email me at info@thebarbershopgroup.org. You can also email me at charles.ketchings@thebarbershopgroup.org. You can DM us on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. Let us know what state you're in. We can find somebody to assist you. We can find somebody to help you work through these things because it's real, man. It's very, very real. It can cause so much pain in your life. If you have been abused, I'm pretty sure that it's caused pain in your life. If you were to be honest, it caused a lot of pain in my life and relationships. I just, many, many things that I have done or said or felt that were a direct response or had a direct correlation to the abuse and the trampling of boundaries and all of those things, man. And I tell you, I've been asked, what are you going to do to keep this from happening to your kids? Not what am I going to do to keep this from happening to my kids by other people even, but what am I going to do so that I don't do this to my kids? All right. It's just, we've got to have this conversation. We've got to be open with each other. I hope that me sharing with you all is not too much. There will be some other episodes on this. It'll be a series. And I look forward to talking to you guys about this stuff more. I know that there are a lot of men out there who are not ready to talk, and that's okay. Nobody should force you to speak about these things. You may not be in a safe place to do it. You may not be physically safe, emotionally safe, or anything like that. And I just hope that at some point you will get there. Okay. But guys, enjoy yourselves. I know this was a little bit of some heavy information for you all this weekend, but continue to enjoy the Thanksgiving weekend. If you celebrate it, if not, enjoy just some time with your families and get some self-care, man. Go to the gym, do whatever it is that you do to take a load off. And hopefully you all will be well. Until next time, we'll talk to you soon.